Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Welcome to Stagecraft, Variety's theater podcast, bringing you backstage and behind the scenes with the stars and creators of the hottest shows on Broadway, off Broadway, and singing from an apartment window near you. On this episode of Stagecraft, I'm talking to Brian Stokes Mitchell. Theater fans probably don't need me to introduce him, but here goes, just in case. Mitchell is the Tony-winning Broadway favorite from shows like Ragtime, Kiss Me Kate, King Hedley II, Man of La Mancha, and Shuffle Along. He's also the chairman of the board of the Actors Fund, the human services organization supporting entertainment industry professionals. And more recently, he spent some of his time during the coronavirus lockdown serenading first responders from his apartment window with The Impossible Dream, his signature number from Man of La Mancha. He's since had to quit singing out of concern for the safety of the crowds he was attracting, but now he's in the virtual studio with me to tell us about his continued work with the Actors Fund and everything else keeping him busy while theater is on pause. Hi, Stokes. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Gordon. It's great being with you.
So before we start talking about the Actors Fund, you had to give up singing out your window. Tell us why.
As a lot of people know, I mean, it kind of started with I actually went through COVID and I had quite a battle with it. Yeah. And during that process, that's when everybody started applauding, you know, for all the healthcare workers out of the windows. And I was doing that even while I was kind of recovering. And at some point, I felt, oh, I think I can sing, because I was vocalizing to kind of help my lungs and everything. And I just started spontaneously singing The Impossible Dream out the window. And then I did it the next day because it felt good. And I did it the next day. And I noticed that there was a crowd starting to form underneath. And right. Then I started getting a lot of news coverage about it as well. People were telling me, oh, I saw you in Japan, or
yeah, right.
I saw you in Italy or something like that. I said, oh, yeah. Really? I didn't know I was over there.
Yeah.
But as a result of that, the crowds on Broadway started to get kind of large, and I was getting a little concerned.
And this is Broadway the street, we should say,
this
right?
Is, yeah, this is Broadway the street.
On the Upper West Side, yeah.
Yes. I was starting to get a little concerned because I was looking down and I could see people, you know, when I started singing, sometimes people would come across the street without really paying very much attention to the traffic. And sometimes the people driving in the cars would be, not paying so much attention. So I actually talked to someone from the NYPD about it, you know, and I said, hey, I'm really concerned. I want to make your lives, you know, easier, not more difficult. And what can I do? And the guy I talked to said, well, how about not singing from your window? So I said, yeah, I could do that. And, you know, and I was starting to get a little concerned about it anyway. So actually that evening I made an announcement from the window that I wasn't going to do that. But what I might do actually now is somebody just told me that this week is National Nurses Week. And somebody said they go to one of the hospitals around here from the neighborhood that had seen me sing in the window. And said, why don't you come up and sing for the nurses up there? Because the crowds are getting a little smaller there and the fire engines used to come and applaud them and they're not doing that anymore.
Oh, yeah,
so I think I might do that starting tonight.
Yeah. How hard was it to start singing after COVID? Like, because one of the, as I understand it, one of the things that it really hits is your respiratory system. So how was that a long process to sort of get yourself back up to singing form?
Not so long, because I was kind of doing, you know, singers are just like, we're just such delicate flowers and we're like hyper focused on our, you know, everything that has to do, you know, your lungs, your trachea, my vocal cords. I can literally feel which of my vocal cords is having an issue, whether it's the right side or the left side. You know, we're concerned about our sinuses and all of that stuff. So because we're so, you know, hyper focused on all of those things, I was very aware of what was going on in my lungs. And I was fortunate that towards the end of my illness is when it started going into my lungs, but it didn't go in terribly. Mm. I felt it first in my trachea and then I could feel it going into my lungs a little bit. And it got to the point where if I took a big breath, I would start coughing. But when I was vocalizing, I realized it was going away more and more. And I just was doing vocal exercises and breathing exercises as well. And I was trying to, move as much as I could as well. And so, you know, but that's hard to do while I was in isolation at the house. But
yeah, of course.
I know some like Qigong exercises that I was doing for the lungs. So I was doing those as well. So by the time I got to the window to sing, I was really feeling pretty good. And it keeps improving more and more kept improving every time that I did it. And I would say now, if I take a really deep breath, I'm 99% back. I can feel just a little something at the top of my breath. But other than that, it feels quite good now.
Yeah, good. And so a lot of the streaming shows that people have turned to during this lockdown, particularly theater people have turned to during this lockdown, have been benefits, several of them for the Actors Fund, which is an organization you have been involved with for a long time. Tell us about your involvement and what the Actors Fund does.
I'm the chairman of the board of the Actors Fund. I've been the chairman of the board now for 15 years. I signed up just for my last 3 years, never knowing, of course, we'd have a pandemic. But actually, I'm very glad that I did that, because it seems like, well, maybe this is one of the reasons I'm on the planet and the Actors Fund is on the planet as well. The Actors Fund has been around for 138 years, and it doesn't just serve actors. It serves anybody who is an entertainment community professional, I like to say, call us, that has made a living. So it serves actors, singers, dancers, camera people, boom operators, radio announcers, anybody that you can think of. And that's a lot of people, because those are all the people right now, particularly, that have gotten hit really, really hard. Kind of as an example, I was hit like in all four of those areas. I was doing a show with my wife at City Center Encores that got canceled, along with the rest of Broadway. Right. I had a television show that I've been working on called Prodigal Son that I've been recurring on, but that got canceled because I had some more episodes to film on that, or postponed, as they're saying. I had about six concerts, because I do concerts all over the United States. All of those were canceled. And also a film that I was about to do some work on that also got canceled. But when I say that, I don't say that to call attention to me. I say that to call attention, on a film, we're talking about hundreds of people that includes. Same thing with the television show. Same thing with the Broadway show. There are at least dozens of people that are also involved with that show that people don't see and aren't aware of, that are in the background, doing incredibly important work, like the crew, the lighting people, the orchestra that you often don't see, but you hear, all kinds of people, and everybody's out of work. And I think, unfortunately, we're going to be one of the last sectors to come back, particularly live theater, because we rely on people gathering in a room, in a group together.
Right. And what sorts of things are the Actors Fund doing to sort of mitigate this crisis right now? And what is it trying to do with all these funds that it's raising?
This is what we do. This is what we specialize in is, our motto is to help people in times of need or crisis or transition. And we seem to be in all three of those now.
Right.
One of the main things that we've been doing is dealing with emergency financial assistance, which has really gone up quite a bit. Normally, in a year, we would give out about $2 million in emergency financial assistance to different people. And this is for things like, things that they need, sometimes help with the rent, help paying for their insurance, sometimes help with food. But right now, we're getting about 250 requests a day for emergency financial assistance.
Wow.
And at this point, we've given out about, $9.5 million in emergency financial assistance. Normally, in a year, that would be $2 million, and we're thinking probably by mid-June we'll be up to about $27 million. But it's about four times the amount that we would normally do in a year. But that's one of the things that we do. But we have all kinds of programs. One of the great things about the fund is that they were very forward thinking, And we transitioned the financial assistance applications and all those to online and to phone services quickly. So people can still call up and go online and get help from people because everybody is still, you know, at work at the Actors Fund trying to help out with that.
And I imagine that the onus is now on the Actors Fund to raise even more money than it always has because you're giving out so much more money and, you know, so many more people are in need at this moment. Is that right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's kind of shocking, I think, at this point when I look at the numbers that we're dealing with right now, because our usual budget, our 2020 budget is $46 million, and it looks like support and revenue is going to increase to about $76 million this year. But one of the great things is, you know, it feels like for the last 138 years, the fund has been in this marvelous kind of rehearsal for this very moment that we happen to be in right now, because in that time we've been connecting kind of, I feel like we've almost been like the hub of the wheel to a lot of different organizations, to a lot of the unions, I would say pretty much all of the entertainment unions and organizations. So now a lot of them have come forward and they're giving lots of money. Netflix, TikTok, Disney, lots of individual donors as well have been giving money. And of course, Broadway Cares Equity Fights AIDS, which has always been our single largest donor, has been incredibly generous during all of this. But everybody's coming forward at this point to help out. And then, as you said, there are all kinds of artists that are coming up with wonderful ideas, like Seth Rudetsky and James Wesley Stars in the House, that happens at 2 and 8 every day, which is to make money for the Actors Fund. Jason Howland and the cast of Beautiful that did this incredible video of You Got a Friend, also for the Actors Fund. Hump Day with Hampshire, which is another show that raises money for the fund. I mean, there's lots and lots of things. Artists, you just can't keep artists down. Nothing can, even a pandemic, it seems. And we are compelled to do what we do. And especially now, all those artists are really coming forward to help with such amazingly creative and wonderful ideas.
And what still needs to be kept to the forefront of everybody's mind as we're looking ahead? As you mentioned, it seems like the performing arts one of the things that will come back latest.
Yes. From what aspect do you ask that question? Because there's lots of different points of view I could answer that question.
Yeah, I guess in terms of what an organization like the Actors Fund is able to focus on and where it wants to sort of direct things in the future.
Yeah. Well, right now we're dealing with the immediate, which is the Emergency Assistance Fund. That's almost every single call we get. Of course, we have, you know, all kinds of other programs, and those things continue. Programs for seniors. We still have the Actors Fund Home. We have housing, the Palm View, the Friedman Residence. We have all of these other things that are continuing to go on. But what we're really dealing with now is the emergency assistance. But in the coming months, you know, we have work stoppage coming on. We have state quarantines that are still going to be in transition. And what we're looking at is kind of trying to figure out where we'll need to be. And so we're trying to respond to like the ongoing demand for the emergency financial assistance and also an increased need for services around health insurance, education, enrollment, navigating careers, because nobody knows where we're going to be with our careers, and also the government systems in the COVID economy, mental health, addiction and recovery, which is being impacted really strongly by this, of course, and for affordable housing as well, because so many people are going to be out of work. And, you know, where are we going to, how are they going to be able to live, and where are we going to be able to live? And we don't even know what's going to happen with the housing market at this point. The problem with this disease is there's more questions than there are answers. And we have 50 million questions and we have 10 answers. And what we need to do, I think, is kind of, which is so incredibly difficult, sit back and wait till we have some answers. And mostly now we're waiting for those answers from the scientists. Because they're the ones that are listening to the virus. And honestly, the virus is telling us what we are going to be able to do and what we're not going to be able to do. It's Mother Nature. It's like, you know, being kind of the victims of a tornado, a hurricane, a tidal wave, something like that, we realize how small we are as human beings, but also we realize how creative and amazing we are as human beings as well, to be able to, you know, battle this kind of thing, and especially whether it's the immediate effects or the after effects of it. I mean, we have lots of really, really great minds working in a lot of different areas, and of course, with that, you also have some not so great minds. I won't say any more than that.
You also work with an organization called Americans for the Arts. Tell us a little bit about that and what they're doing at this time.
Yes, Americans for the Arts is another really terrific organization. It's an arts lobbying and advocacy organization. And it's not just for the performing arts, it's for all of the arts, for visual arts as well. And people can find out more about both of these organizations, AmericansForTheArts.org or ActorsFund.org, or just Google them, and that, you know, that'll take them straight to probably the sites. But Americans for the Arts is focused on arts in our communities, arts education, both for-profit and nonprofit arts as well. And there's a lot of really interesting information they have. They just have done two surveys, not only with artists, but with arts organizations as well. And the numbers that are coming back are kind of depressing, you know, about the number of people that have lost their jobs because of COVID, and a number of theaters that are not working anymore. And I think about 10 or 15% of them at this point think they're not going to come back from this. And the ones that are getting hit the hardest, it looks like, are going to be the mid-sized theaters. You know, the larger ones have endowments. The smaller ones are used to scrapping for money and, you know, having to work hard and doing things for free. But it's the mid-sized theaters that are, most of them, all over the country, that are going to get really hit, because, you know, they kind of work from month to month. Their budgets are much, much more closely shaven than the rest of them. And Americans for the Arts has suggestions on how you can help the theater in your community as well. So people can go online and kind of see those ideas. And if you're an artist, also please take the surveys that they're putting on, or an arts organization. That would be very useful.
Yeah.
I'll have more with Brian Stokes Mitchell right after the break.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com.
And now here's more with Brian Stokes Mitchell.
You're someone who, for a long time, as you mentioned, 15 years with the Actors Fund, has been very associated with the sort of charitable organizations that you do a lot of work for. Why is that important to you to remain involved as you have and for as long as you have?
Well, you know, I feel incredibly fortunate. This is all I have done for my entire life is performing. Since I was 17 years old and left home, I immediately went into an acting company, and I went from there to Los Angeles, and I immediately got into a television series. And then from there, I got into a Broadway show, and, you know, one thing has led to another, and I keep changing, you know, what it is that I'm doing. Sometimes it's voiceover work, sometimes it's concerts, sometimes it's theater, sometimes it's television or film. But I've always been able to make my living only doing that. And I haven't had to have a backup job, waiting tables or something like that, which are, by the way, in the times
also not viable right now, right?
Those are also not viable. So that's the other thing, you know, all the backup jobs that actors are so accustomed to having. But I've been very, very fortunate that this is all that I've done in my life. And, when I was asked to be a part of the Actors Fund and also Americans for the Arts as well. And it was, I think, 18 or 19 years ago now, because I was on the board before I was the chairman of the board for a number of years as well. That's for the Actors Fund. When I was asked to be a part of it, you know, I think, you know, the universe has been so good to me. When the universe asks for you to help and give something back, you say yes. So that's what I've been doing. And that's what I'm doing now. And I continue to do now. If people ask me, you know, to do things, generally I say yes. And honestly, I'm finding that I'm busier now than I was when I was getting paid for it. Like, I get up in the morning and I'm doing videos and I'm doing interviews and I'm doing something for somebody or whatever it is. And then I look at my clock and it's 1 a.m. and I think, where did the time go? But it's really good. It's very, very good work. And I felt that all along with my work with the charities as well, that, you know, it just makes you feel good. And I'm working with brilliant people, Joe Benincasa, who's the president and CEO of the Actors Fund, and Robert Lynch, who's the CEO of Americans for the Arts, are just not only brilliant human beings, but wonderful human beings, really great people that I just feel so honored to know. And so I feel blessed being able to even give that way, you know, on a number of different levels.
Yeah. As you mentioned, you work in all sorts of media and you have for your entire career. When did you first feel the pull of Broadway? Because Broadway has, at least for us theater fans, become the place where you are kind of most strongly associated with.
Yeah, which is kind of... I love that, but it's been odd to me because throughout my career, that's kind of been, you know, when I was doing television, that's what everybody thought. I was a television person. Right. And they were surprised when I did Broadway. And then I went into voiceovers. I did a lot of animated voiceovers and people, you know, a lot of people knew me from that. And they thought that's what I was doing. So, you know, I always say it's harder to hit a moving target. So I keep changing things up. It's also useful because, you know, you never know where the work is and you kind of have to keep reinventing yourself every now and then. But I actually was raised on the stage. When I started acting, I started in San Diego when I was about 14 years old with a company called or group called San Diego Junior Theater, which was originally founded 80-90 years ago now by the Old Globe Theater.
And is that where you're from, the San Diego area?
No, I'm from Seattle, but we moved around a lot. I was raised overseas. My father was a civilian working for the Navy, so most of my childhood was spent in Guam and the Philippines. But when I was 14 years old, we moved back to San Diego, and that's when I got involved in acting. And then I got involved. I started working at the Globe Theater and Starlight Opera, and that kind of was my beginning. But I always think that my roots are in the theater. They're not. I studied film acting for a very, very long time and with lots of different people as well. And I did that for a long time and I continue to do that. But I think my first love is the theater, and especially musical theater, because I love to sing, and music has been such a big part of my life since I was 6 years old is when I started playing the piano. Oh, wow. And I've been singing even before that. So I do feel like this is really my home, New York and Broadway. And I'm, you know, just feel very honored and blessed and happy to have been welcomed to this community like I have. But after I did the series that I was on called Trapper John MD, for the three people that remember that, I actually went into a theatrical production at the Pasadena Playhouse that ended up being transferred to Broadway. So that was my introduction to Broadway. And then it kind of took off from there. And I would go back and forth for a while, but I love Broadway so much. And I felt in my heart, you know, that's what I'm supposed to be doing.
What do you think of as a particularly meaningful early gig for you, or an early job that really shaped your career and how you tackle it?
Wow. It's funny because it's hard for me to pick out any one thing early in my career. I feel like my career has been this series of different events and different shows. Literally, I could track everything that I'm doing up till now, all the way back to San Diego Junior Theater when I was 16 years old and played Conrad Birdie in Bye Bye Birdie, which is the first musical production that I had ever done as an actor. And I remember feeling the response of the audience, and, you know, and that I think was the first experience that made me say, oh, I kind of like this. I maybe have a, an, an ability or an affinity for this as well. And then one thing led to another, and the connections that I made from that and from being in junior theater led to the Globe and the other places that I worked in Starlight Opera. And those connections led me to the 12th Night Repertory Company, which took me up to Los Angeles. And because I was there, that allowed me to go into television. And because of the television, that allowed me to enter Broadway on a certain level. You know, I didn't have to start from the very beginning on Broadway. So everything is fed into everything else. And that's what I feel, you know, I think that life is kind of a continuum for most of us. I don't think there's that many people that, you know, have that lucky big break that goes boom and here they are all of a sudden. And you know, that puts them on the map. Some people do. And most of those I find are kind of one hit wonders. They seem to disappear quickly as well. But I think it's the people that really work hard and work at their craft for a long time and kind of ripen slowly that seem to have the longest careers, not always, but usually, I think. And I feel maybe I was one of those slow ripeners. And I think really it's been about the joy of learning. I do lots of things. I also write and music and orchestrate and compose. I've done 3 solo albums that I produced. And so, you know, you learn a lot of things as well with that. And people often ask me, what do you do best? Well, what I think I do best is I'm a student. I like to study. I like to learn new things. And I think that's taken me far in life. And I still love that. It's great to be curious, I think, if you're an artist.
Yeah. Do you, among your more recent work, Impossible, I guess, well, relatively recent, Impossible Dream, the song you were singing out the window, is one that's been very associated with you. Did that start with Man of La Mancha, or did you have an association with that song prior to that?
No, I never did. It started with Man of La Mancha. It's a show that I actually did at the Belleville Dinner Theater in San Diego, which is long defunct, you know, along with most of the other dinner theaters. And I just played one of the muleteers. As a matter of fact, I was one of the nameless muleteers because I had an extra muleteer, so I didn't even have a name. I think we made up something like I was Paco or something like that. The other ones are mostly named in the script. Yeah. But I remember seeing the gentleman who was playing Don Quixote and thinking, oh man, one day I would really love to do that role. Because even back then I had this big baritone voice. Yeah. You know, it wasn't as refined or as schooled at that point, but I could, you know, still carry a pretty decent tune. I never dreamed that I would be doing it on Broadway. And when I first approached Mitch Lee about doing the show, I found out that he had seen me perform in Ragtime and some other shows and Kiss Me Kate, I think, as well. And he and Dale Wasserman, who was still alive at the time, both of them were there. They both passed on. They both said, you know what, it would be great to do a revival of the show with that guy. So they were kind of thinking of me. So it was mutually wonderful. And one of the things I was looking forward to was doing The Impossible Dream. You know, I mean, the good news is you get to sing that song, which is one of the best known songs in the world. It's been covered by everybody. And the bad news is you get to sing that song, which is one of the best known songs in the world. It's been covered by everybody. So my challenge was to find a new way to sing it and a new into it. And I think I found that for myself. And it has kind of become like a signature song for me and probably the most requested song that I get. Usually I can hardly do a concert without somebody screaming out to sing Impossible Dream, even if I had not planned on singing it. So, and it's an amazing song actually. And especially now, you know, it applies very much to this time, you know, the lyrics of it, to dream the impossible dream, to fight the unbeatable foe, to bear with unbearable sorrow, to run where the brave dare not go. And I love it because it's not a song about trying to do the impossible. It's a song about trying, period.
Right.
You know, we can't do anything unless we try. And that's what we're all trying to do right now. The, you know, the nurses, the doctors, the EMS workers, the scientists, all of us just living life, just trying to get through. We're all trying right now. And it seems to be a perfect song for this time.
When all this is over, what is the thing that you are most looking forward to doing?
Wow. I think what I'm most looking forward to doing is sitting in a theater with other people without fear, not only me, but everybody else sitting around me without fear that you're going to catch some disease, and to be able to celebrate what's going on the stage and to hear the music of the orchestra to watch the work of the people on the stage, to experience the work of all of the people behind the scenes as well that are a part of that production that make that happen. That's what I think I most look forward to is that actually.
Yeah, well, I look forward to that moment when we can all gather in a theater with you up on stage or in the audience with us. Thanks very much, Stokes, for taking the time to speak with me.
It has been my pleasure. Thanks so much for having me, Gordon.
That was Tony-winning Broadway favorite Brian Stokes Mitchell. If you like what you're hearing on this and other episodes of Stagecraft, you can rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, and you can subscribe and find past episodes there and on all the other pod places, including Spotify and on the Broadway Podcast Network, which is a great place to find more theater for your ears. I'll be back next week with another new episode. Thanks for listening, and see you soon.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.